Good morning. It's time for Free for All, your morning telephone discussion program from KATI.
And once again, a very special good morning to you all on this Katy Classic weekend. We have a special edition of Free for All, and today it's the group from the 70s. And what a group it is. We keep saying that. Of course, yesterday and on Friday, we had the group from the early 60s. But we have quite a group here with us today. Joining us on the phone from Colorado Springs, Phil Kuhn, who used to go by the name of Phil Rogers, but he was also the engineer at Katy for a number of years. As you say, a parking lot in Seattle, huh, Jock?
That's right.
We have Jock.
It's raining.
And it's raining. Okay. Well, get your umbrella out. Jock Blaney is in Seattle today. Doc Mueller is in Illinois. Pete Williams, former newsman and announcer and Katy School reporter for NCHS. Pete Williams is in Washington, D.C. Neil Shambaugh is in West Virginia. We'll get the details of exactly where when we talk with him. Here in the studio, we have Mark Harkins, who went by Mark Allen on the air. And beside him is Gene Wallace. Welcome, everyone. It's time
Thank
to talk
you.
It.
Hey,
it's
you guys.
We're all here.
Time
Hi.
To talk at once.
Hi, David.
Yeah, I was just wondering if we were going to use our radio names today.
What was your radio name?
It's easy for me.
and actually, the Katy days, I did go by Mark Harkins. I wasn't smart enough at the time.
Hey, Mark, this is Doc. You sound exactly the same, Mark.
I look the same, too.
Except for
maybe twice the size, a little less hair. And it's white now, Doc. But yeah. you don't have
the Firebird, the screaming chicken Firebird anymore.
I do not. I wish I did. With Pontiac gone, I think maybe it'll be worth some money here. But
let's just kind of do a round robin, I guess, first, and let's talk about where everybody is at this current time. Mark Harkins, you were just talking. What are you doing now? I mean, after you left Katy, I know you did some traveling around the country and whatnot, but give us your background.
Well, I ended up in the oil field. About half the people in Casper do, I guess. And am still in distribution, not in directly in the oil field, but working with a supply company here in town and enjoying it. You have to grow up. You know, I was telling you guys earlier, I started at 14, and I was a young, impressionable, innocent 14-year-old, and people like Gene Wallace, Doc, and Jock thoroughly corrupted me. I enjoyed every minute of it. I enjoyed it all. But I had to grow up. But I grew up back here in Casper. That's great.
So you're doing inventory control and
I'm
parts?
I'm inventory and purchasing manager for Crum Electric Supply here in Casper.
All right.
Corporate purchasing. So
right next to you is Gene Wallace. Gene, you were at Katy from what, about 1970 to when?
It was approximately 1970 to 1974. I've had some real difficulty trying to figure out exactly when my shift was.
Alzheimer's is great, isn't it?
It sure is. Yeah.
What have you been doing since Katy?
Well, I left Katy in 74. I was married in 1974, and in 75, my wife Connie and I went to Bozeman, Montana. We did undergrad and graduate school there and took jobs with Conoco. Wound up in Oklahoma, where we resided for 16 years, then were transferred to Houston, Texas. During that time in Houston, I finished my education by attending law school, so kind of a checkered background, I think. We had an opportunity to do something that I think probably most people don't get to do, and that's come home. We were and are very excited about being back in Casper. We plan to be here for the rest of our lives, I think. We bought a house, and we were trying to fix it up and do landscaping and whatnot, and that was fine in the summer and winter when I, you know, could no longer get people out to do things.
Or when you couldn't stand up because of the wind.
I Yeah, I really began getting cabin fever, pacing the floor, and decided to go to work for the county. They had an opening in their development department, and that's what I've been doing, is trying to deal with zoning issues, subdivision, all of the developmental growth-oriented activities happening in Natrona County.
That's great. Let's see. Let's move to Colorado. Phil Kuhn, what are you up to these days? You are actually retired, aren't you?
Yeah, I better be at my age, I'll tell you. I'll be 71 this June, and we started at Katie when we were 31.
Hey, Phil, is Clyde still around?
Yeah, he's still here.
He's about 97 now.
But Phil, what have you been doing with your last 40 years of your life?
Well, we left Katie. We went to back to Denver, or actually Boulder. Went to work for NCAR, the National Center for Atmospheric Research. Handled the communications aspects of their field work. They were doing a lot of storm chasing and that sort of thing. And was down in Oklahoma City working down there off the big towers down there. We had a 1,500-foot tower, and we had some equipment up there about 1,400-foot level, and trying to work through the storm season and keep everything running. After that, we went to work at ETO, which is Airhorn Technological Operations, which is down in Canyon City, where they make ham radio gear. We moved to Washington, the state of Washington, after that, worked at the Nye Company there. Was also ham radio equipment. Got called back to ETO to work for their commercial end of the business. We're designing RF wires for MRI equipment.
You were working with GE a lot in their MRI development then?
Yes. That was one of the first ones that we were involved with, and we ended up with just about all of them at some time or another.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Let's go to the parking lot up in Seattle. Jock Blaney, what's been going on in your life?
Well, I'm just trying to stay dry right now today.
Okay. Well,
I could either do this outside or do it in the car, and it's definitely not it's not Las Vegas. It's definitely a little wet up here.
You had to bring your webbed feet with you then.
Yeah, that's right. And I got to say, the Mueller sounds the same, too.
Blaney, you sound wonderful, Jock. Gee.
Jock, what have you been doing? I know that you moved a lot here in Casper. You worked at Katy, then you went to K2 for a number of years, K2 Radio, and then over on the FM side. But after you left Casper, where did you go?
After I left K2, I went over to KTRS, and then I left from there and went to Seattle. And that was in, I think it was 86. And I was in Seattle until just about 5 years ago. And I worked for Golden West Broadcasting there, which was the Gene Autry stations from the West Coast. He had stations in California and Washington. I was there until just the early part of 90, and then I went out on my own. Mm-hmm. I was just doing voiceovers and radio, TV commercial, stuff like that. And I've been doing that ever since, doing video games, things.
Using your character voices, I seem to remember you recorded an album in there in the middle someplace.
Yeah, a couple of them, actually. That was in 1990.
Ponderous, Blaney. Ponderous.
Yeah.
I've still got it.
Ponderous, man.
Really? Yeah, sure do. If you want a copy, I can give you the copy, I guess.
He's probably got a trunk full of them, so.
These are the legal albums that he's recording, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. But, that was fun. That was a little stint with Atlantic Records for about 2 years until we found out all the record stories you hear, all the nightmare stories you hear about record companies were actually true. So that, you know, that did that for a while, but that was still, I was still doing other work at the same time. That was kind of like just a little fun hobby that we had.
So now you're in Vegas and a professional golfer.
Hey, I wish. I would have made my living at that. I'd look like Karen Carpenter. You could put my picture on the side of an album.
Doc, you jumped in there very briefly. What have you been up to for the last several years?
It's great to hear all these guys. I haven't seen Blaney for a while. It's great to hear Blaney. I was there 73, right before Christmas 73, and then I went over to K2. Pete called, and I went over to K2 and did weather there for a bit, and then Ann and I left in 85, came to Springfield, Illinois, did a stint as downstate press secretary for the Attorney General here, and since about 88, I've been doing government relations and communications work for groups of utilities here, and I get to see Pete every now and then, because I get to Washington quite often, so it's always great to bump into Pete when I'm out there.
And virtually never buys a meal when he comes here.
Not necessarily untrue, but mean.
Well, let's see. Neil Shambaugh, you are in West Virginia now. What route got you to West Virginia?
Well, let's see. I'm in Morgantown, West Virginia, which is just south of Pittsburgh, and I work as a professor at the university here. But I was at Katy 1974-75, and that would have been Jim Neal to people who were listening. And I get to credit or blame Jock Blaney for getting me to Katy, because he rescued me from middle-of-the-road radio in Gillette. You remember that? You remember don't you? That is your fault or your credits. I do appreciate that.
Yeah, it was a good move.
I was happy to be at Katy, only though it lasted about a year. I got to meet Gene, of course, and I think Gene remained one of my best friends for a long time, and I think the first night we got together right after Monday's whatever, and we went to the Holiday Inn, and we've been friends ever since.
The famous Holiday Inn.
Yeah, the infamous Holiday Inn. But after that, I went back to Gillette and started KGWY, which is Y100, and that's where I met Doc Schutz. We got Doc up there for a little while, and after a couple of years, I went out east, basically sold my ownership in the station, and went to work at Virginia Tech. I was a video producer there for 15 years and got to know that place pretty well, and on the side, I got 3 degrees and got into academia, so that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years or so.
So as you say, now you really know something?
Yeah, I finally know something, yeah. I've got a piece of paper to prove it. Yeah.
Finally, Mr. Pete Williams, and that's heavy on the word Mr. Pete, how you doing, and what are you doing?
As opposed to what, I'm not sure, but yes, I was at Katy 70 through 74. I worked there in the summer, so I worked everybody's shift when they went on vacation. And when I started there, we were still running Arthur Godfrey, so I put Arthur Godfrey on in the morning, and I also worked, and this was good preparation for working at NBC. My main job was to come on the air at midnight on Saturday and work till 6 a.m. and then come back Sunday and work noon to 6. So I can't complain about the hours here. But then I went to K2, was there for about 10 years, and then I went to the government for a while, and I've been at NBC since 1993.
Well, Pete, I still want to talk to you about that engineering job. While I was at the Kmart show, you were back running the board for me, if I remember right.
You were Kmarting at Kmart, yes.
On a Sunday afternoon.
You would leave a stack of records, and so that the audience could be astonished that you would announce a record, and the one you announced actually about 8 times out of 10 would come up. And it was a very sophisticated method we had of communicating, because you'd say, now, if you hear this, just dump the audio for a second on the record.
Right.
And then, yeah. Yes.
We all remember that, yes.
But you couldn't give messages over the air, so anyway. Well, folks, let's...
I was going to say one other thing. When I started, I was also doing news. And at the time, it was called Katy Total News. I was Pete Williams, Katy Total News. And then the owner of the station, Pat Meenan, apparently had a television set, because he was fond of a show that came on about that time called I Spy, with Robert Culp and Bill Cosby as spies. And this lit an idea in his head that whenever any of us were doing news stories outside the building, from our cars or phoning something in, we had to sign it off by saying, Pete Williams, KATI Spy Mobile News.
Wow, and I had forgotten all about that.
That came from.
Yeah, and we told Pat we thought it was one of the stupidest things we'd ever heard, and we kept doing it for quite a long time until he finally agreed.
Well, when Larry Wakefield was on yesterday, he talked about the KATI spy reports and how everybody had radio telephones in their car, and The salespeople automatically became news people. And hey, folks, let's take a little break here. We'll reconnoiter and figure out where we're going to go next. But it's going to be exciting, so you stay right where you are. Back with our special edition of Free for All, and we have a very special group of people with us. Phil Kuhn, who worked with Katie as an engineer and an announcer in the early 70s. Jock Blaney is with us. Doc Mueller, Pete Williams, Neil Shambaugh went as Jim Neal on the air. Mark Harkins, Gene Wallace, also joining us from the sales staff. Connie Moore Ashbaugh is with us now, and we'll get her in here on a microphone and talk a little bit about her time at KATI. Before we move too far astray, I think we should probably mention some of the folks who were very instrumental at KATI, but who are no longer with us. Obviously, Pat Meenan died in 2001. But a couple of other folks that were very important in the KATI years in the 70s, Bob Coleman and Frank Barrett. I'll open it up to whoever wants to talk about those great folks.
Bob is the one who hired me, first of all. As I said earlier, a 14-year-old kid showed up one day to see my father, and he said, "Boy, you know, I think he could do something." But the story really is as much about Jock Blaney as Bob Coleman. Jock used to give Bob Coleman the hardest time all the time. And Jock, of course, has that very sharp wit. I'm not sure that's a compliment, Jock, so don't take it that way.
I think it is, Mark.
Oh, thanks. But I never saw anybody get the better of Jock Blaney until one day Jock was just ripping into Bob, just giving him the hardest time, and Bob was just so quiet. And it was back in the 70s when the big cuffs on your pants mm-hmm. were so popular. And
double knit pants.
Bob looked at Jock and said, "You know, Jock, if you buy your pants to fit, you wouldn't have to roll them up like that." And I'm not sure you remember that, but it was the first time I ever saw you quiet.
I've been quiet ever since.
One of the things that I remember about Bob Coleman is he was just a smooth operator on the air. Nothing really flapped him or anything. I have some audio of Bob. This is a sports cast that I think is from around 1973 that we can listen to just a portion there.
And a good afternoon, Bob Coleman, with a look at KATI Sports, brought to you by Casper Lumber. Casper College T-Birds whipped Central out of Riverton last night here in town, and that final was 98-71. That's seven straight wins for Sweet Erickson's club. Their record for the year is seven wins and a loss, and it'll be in action again Saturday on the road. They will play in Scott's Bluff. 98-71. Tony Martin with 23 points last night for the T-Bird win. The number one rated high school team in the state, Cheyenne Central, beat Scotts Bluff, Nebraska last night 72-63. Also, Lovell beat Powell 60-59, and LaGrange beat Albin 48-40.
This is Pete Williams. I would bet that he probably had very little of that written down. He was a very gifted ad-libber, and he knew a lot about sports, and he could do a 5 or 8 minute sportscast with about 9 words written down. He was fabulous that way.
Yeah, he would just rip the scores off the machine, and it would just flow. He really was really something to watch. And a great guy. I saw him and I saw Pat together shortly before Pat's death. I did not know Pat was ill, and we were back to see Ann's mom in Casper, and Bob was living in an apartment downtown. Near the old Village Inn Pancake House, and so I got the obligatory case of beer, and we went up to the apartment, and Coleman's on oxygen, and Pat comes in, and the three of us sit in there, and we ended up calling Steve LaBelle, who some of you will remember, and drinking most of that case of beer, and that's the last time I ever saw Pat. Pat died several months after that, and as I say, I did not even know he was ill. And then of course Bob subsequently moved to Colorado, but just great old stories and nice folks.
I recall that Bob Coleman was quite instrumental in developing and growing the boys' club in Casper. I think he was he was coaching boxing, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
One of the folks that worked with Bob and worked with you all on the sales side was Connie Moore Ashbaugh. And Connie is joining us. Connie, you say you have a great story about
Bob.
Well,
I just remember when he was doing his sports on the morning show with Larry Wakefield. And I don't know if I was cleaning the station then or what. I don't know.
No, I worked there, Connie. You weren't. Let me tell you.
I started cleaning the station.
Nobody was cleaning it.
It was the worst, dirty station I ever. It was worse than this one. Anyway, it was football season, and they were talking football and everything, and had given the scores and talked about the football game. And Larry said to Bob, he says, "Do you like grass or turf better?" And Coleman thought a minute, and he says, "I don't know. I've never smoked turf."
Shoot. Now, Bob Coleman was also on the air and did commercials, and let's bring up one of those. This goes back to 1970, a business that is now long gone.
Next time you go to the Elk Street Grocery, listen. Listen, and you'll hear something like this. 2 pounds of sirloin steak, Jake. Or, let me have a nice round roast, Jake. Or, I'd like a nice turkey, Jake. Now, that's one of the nice things about buying meat at the Elk Street Grocery. You get to know the people that work there, and Jake Gardner gets to know you and your family and what your family likes. And whatever they like, beef, veal, lamb, or poultry, you get your pick of the finest. All beef is U.S. choice, all government inspected, high in quality and low in price. So make it a point to stop in at the Elk Street Grocery, 2nd and Elk, and put your family grocery needs in the hands of friendly and competent Jake Gardner. Elk Street Grocery, 2nd and Elk.
There's Bob Coleman, 1970.
It wasn't long after that we junked all those sound effects and the records in the back.
Coleman had, and I never knew when he was, you never knew sometimes if Bob was kidding. I remember on the air, honestly, him coming out of a Jethro Tull song and saying, "That Jethro Tull, he's quite a guy." And I started to laugh, and I didn't know if Bob was being serious or not.
He probably didn't know. He didn't care. He was really, really good.
You know, I think, David, one of the great things about this weekend is bringing all these people together. I hope folks realize what an extraordinary time it was in radio in general, but also KATI had these creative people. You're hearing from them today. Really a great gathering of talent under one very small and, we now know, uncleaned roof. And I remember, for example, you talk about talent, Doc, I remember I was driving around listening to you one day, and you played a sort of a country western tune that had a steel guitar in it. And you said, "That steel guitar, it's well known that your steel guitar will banish communism for wherever it is played." That is a great line, and I've never forgot. I can't hear steel guitar now without hearing you say that.
Thank you. I remember, and you were absolutely right about the amount of talent under that roof at that time. By the way, hi, Connie. How are you? Working with Blaney was a real revelation to me, because not only did he have the vocal skills, he could do anything, and he sang those hilarious election ads for Meenan. Just wonderful stuff. But he also knew how to use, I mean, Doc, you still do, how to use tape recorders and do things to make sounds different. And that's the old days. Those are reel-to-reel tape recorders. None of this fancy electronic gadgetry that just lets you punch some buttons and modify sounds. He had to do all that stuff. And I learned more, sadly, I mean, it didn't do me any good, but I learned more from watching Jock. I mean, just really, Blaney, you were just magnificent.
The other guys.
Oh, Doc, you're way too kind. Thank you.
See if you guys remember this.
I took typing for 4 years. You can sing. You took 4 years of typing. That should qualify you to sing. Hit it, Sam.
I don't see why.
We can do it. We're citizens.
We like him too.
We're voters.
We can sing praises of Pap Meenan if we want to. Ready?
Patrick Meenan is the man for us. He'll work his fingers to the bone all day.
Good.
Patrick Meenan is the man for us. He'll be elected to the House and he'll stay.
Not too bad.
Patrick Meenan is the man for us. He'll help show the state the right way. Though his dress style is weird, his thoughts are sincere. Patrick Meenan is the man of the day.
Well, what do you think?
Well, I thought it was pretty good. Those typing lessons.
They helped.
They did it there.
You forgot something.
Oh.
Paid by the candidates.
1976, guys?
No, it was before that, because it's Neil. I remember that being produced 74, 75, yeah.
Was something. But, you know, let's talk, you probably talked about Pat all weekend, but let's talk a little bit about Pat. It is to Pat's undying credit, and I think some of this goes to Larry, too, because, you know, Larry was doing a lot of the hiring at the time. But you look at somebody like Pete here and what he has done with his career and all of the things that he has done, and this is a relatively small station in Wyoming, and these guys heard this kind of talent and gave it a chance to get started. And that's a real credit to Pat. It's a credit to Larry and all the people that went through there.
Yeah.
Speaking of the award-winning commercial, I have that one as well. Here
and
it is.
Now the Dublin duo for Patrick Meenan's re-election to the State House of Representatives. His name is Patrick Meenan. He's the leader of the clan. Although he's not the meanest, he's the finest in the land. He knows his job. He's not a slob, and this I think you'll find. If you put him in the house again, he's going to speak your mind. His fists go down, his voice goes up, the people know he's there. He's a short and stocky little guy with a funny head of hair. Harligan, Purigan, Billigan, Dunnigan, and all their families too. They're all the friends of Patty Boy, and so are you, and you. Raise your hands for Patrick Meenan. He's the choice of all the people in the land. Raise your voice.
It's really the finest choice of all to make. Paid for by me.
And what award did that win, Jock? Tell the
it was a finalist award for the Clios in, I think it was 75.
And I remember Pat telling me that he was very upset that it didn't get a Grammy.
Jock, I do have one question for you. We've been discussing the cleanliness of the station and the roof. I seem to remember you might be the only one of this group that knew what the roof looked like. What was this about sunbathing on the roof and an episode that happened?
Well, there's several episodes, some of we can't really talk about, but the roof was a perfect place. You know, in those days, you know, it was perfectly fine to go sun for as long as you possibly could, you know. So we would go up there and scrape down quickly, and just because nobody could see, and just lay up there for, you know, an hour or so. And of course, it'd be a thanks to Bob Coleman, there'd always be a supply of beer coming up one side of the building or the other. It was just awesome. You could even do it before you went on the air too. You know, I mean, if
I understand there was an episode about some clothing, though, that went missing. Can someone else relate this story that happened to Jock?
Yeah, I don't remember. Anybody know?
Someone told me that Jock was up on the roof and one of the salespeople snuck up and stole your clothes. Is that a true statement?
Oh, yeah, that happened several times. That was not just...
Shoot.
Somebody mentioned the proximity of the Holiday Inn, which, for folks that don't know, what Katie was at 1400 Katy Lane, which was sort of at the end of the parking lot, just beyond the back of the Holiday Inn. And I think that this happened more than once. I know it happened one Sunday morning to Sig Crossland, who put a long record on, ran over to the Holiday, and came back and realized he'd locked himself out of the station. And the record ended, and it was going... I think he couldn't call anybody. I think Pat finally had to come and open the station for him. But you talk about Pat's patience. A doc talked about his talent in running the place, but he also had a lot of patience to put up with all of us.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Well, that's
true. You know, when I moved to town, which was December 1973, and it was just the wind was. I remember I drove into town. The wind was just howling, and I did not know where the station was. And so, you know, you drive around town, and I saw this big antenna up on a hill. So I thought, I wonder if that's a station. So I drove up there, and I thought, well, this is really nice. You know, this building up here on the hill, nice antenna, view of the mountain. Well, of course, that was KVOC. And I had no idea. So you go down, and it's behind the Holiday Inn, and you drive around the parking lot behind the Holiday Inn, sort of tucked in back there. And am I right? I mean, was Katy Lane ever actually paved?
No. And it still isn't paved. And, you know, and we want to keep it that way, I think. Let's take a short break again, and we'll come back, and we'll hear a little bit from Phil Kuhn and Gene Wallace and some of the other folks that are joining us here on this very, very special edition of Free for All. Back with a group of announcers and employees from the 70s at KATI, the Big 14. Bill Kuhn is on the line. Jock Blaney is on the line. Doc Mueller is on the line. Neil Shambaugh is on the line. Pete Williams had to run off, as he said, to make a dime for the National Biscuit Company. So he has left us for the time being. In the studio, we have Mark Harkins and Gene Wallace and Connie Moore Ashbaugh. Boy, I'll tell you what, there's probably $1 million worth of talent right here in this room right now.
I didn't know you had that much money.
I think Connie has it all.
Yeah.
Well, you know, she is the only one who's in sales, so she probably does have all the money. Let's talk a little bit, if we can, about Frank Barrett. I never worked with Frank, but I know that he was a very, very influential person over at Katy for a long time.
Sales director, is that right, Connie? Wasn't he sales manager?
Was he on KY, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was KY. Yeah. KY, and was the only person at that time selling it, as well as putting it all together.
Of course, KY was the station that Pat signed on in 1966, and it was one of the first FM stations in the state. It went through a lot of incarnations over the years in terms of format and things.
From elevator music to Frank's oldies show, the King Biscuit Flower Hour.
Yeah, classical music.
Yeah, and the Gold Rush. He had one of the most cataloged minds I've ever run across for rock and roll music. He just, you know, any song that you could possibly think of, he could name who wrote it, probably who played lead guitar. You know, it's all those kinds of details, you know, that Frank had stored, you know, and he was amazing that way. You could just sit and talk music with him for hours and hours.
And, you know,
he played, too. He played guitar for... I guess he played pretty good guitar. I heard him a few times, but he was his favorite song to play. And every time you asked him to play guitar was Malagueña. Frank, did you play a little song for us? And you go, hey, I'm gonna do Malagueña. You go, no, don't do Malagueña. But we know the words too.
and Blaney, I don't know if we talked about this while we were on air or off air, but the radio business has changed so much. Now I've not been in it for years, but. It was fun back then, and it was fun because it was relatively loose, and you were working for the community because you weren't owned by a huge big corporation someplace else. But the folks just were in it not because any of us made a lot of money, because none of us made a lot of money at it, but we all sort of enjoyed the same things. When I first got to town, Frank would sort of befriend me, and he would say, "Look, let's go out and." We got for a drink. Well, unfortunately, we went out for this one drink right before both of us were supposed to be on the air that evening. And again, this is sort of the way radio was. And we went down to the old drawbridge. And,
oh, yeah.
And Frank was interested in a young lady at the drawbridge at that time, I remember. And so she waited on us, and we had one, and we had another, and we had a third. And we did get back, and we got on the air on time, but I don't really remember much about that shift. And Frank doesn't, I know, if he were still alive, would not remember much about that shift. We basically just got through them so we could go home and go to sleep. But he was a good guy and a good friend.
I remember Frank and I had a almost a identical closing line. At the end of our shows, I would say, keep it together and straight ahead. And Frank would wind up his show by saying straight ahead. And I remember one time we went over very late at night to the Holiday Inn, and we were having a cup of coffee there. And there was a guy sitting in the booth right next to us, and he gradually figured out who we were. And he said, you know, he says, I really wish you guys would say something else. He said, I was out drinking one night, and you said keep it together and straight ahead, and that's what I did, right into a brick wall.
One of the folks that we haven't heard a lot from today is Phil Kuhn. Phil, you were your entry into broadcasting was kind of interesting, as I remember Steve Rimmel had left and had gone back to Illinois, to Quincy, Illinois. And you and he were ham buddies and had worked together in Boulder. So you came up as the engineer, and did you ever have a thought that you were going to be on the air?
Absolutely not. In fact, that was one of the things I said. I said, well, I don't think I can do that. But they said, well, we'll work you in kind of slowly, and we'll give you a few months to get used to it. And on the second week, they had me on the air show.
And you were on from
the job, I guess.
And you were not on from 6 to midnight either. I think they had you on from like 10 to 2, didn't they, or something?
It was from 2 to 6.
Phil, that's the typical training program at KD Radio.
Well, yeah, the typical training program was 6 to midnight or midnight to 6, one of those, running Dolly Holiday Nighttime or something along that line. Phil, you did have a character, though, that that you developed on your program called Clyde. How did you end up with Clyde?
I don't know. It just the name came from somebody I used to work with. It was kind of a funny character, and so I gave him that name. He's stuck with me. He's here next to me.
Is he?
That's an end to all this.
Does he still have that wheezing laugh?
What?
Well, he had Clyde had a kind of a wheezing sort of laugh, I think.
He had a, why you?
Let's go back to 1974. Let's see if anybody recognizes this voice.
Romance knows no seasons. Sometimes in winter. If you're planning a winter wedding, you already know that. When the good. If you're shopping for wedding rings, seems like men, you'll soon discover that beauty knows no season. If the spirit of romance is in the air, a wedding in the future, Oaks Jewelers has the rings. Westridge, Hilltop, and Downtown.
That was a million-dollar voice in the 70s. Who was that masked person?
It slowed down a bit. I meant to tell you, you needed to tweak that audio. I couldn't believe I still had that in the house.
Jim Neal.
The real Jim Neal.
Yeah.
That was a fun time. I mean, I was 8 until 1 in the morning, and then I finally convinced Laurie I needed to have a life, you know, so he gave me 6 to 10. That's when I met Mark, I think. Mark, didn't you relieve me after Mystery Theater?
I remember the latter years when I was working afternoon drive after Jock. But, you know, I did a lot of midnight to 6 in the morning when I was young. Katy was a great place for me because I played a lot of baseball, and they allowed me to come and go during the summer and still work when I could. High school sports, they worked with me there. Pat was great with that, as was Larry. And then Jock Blaney came, and he fostered that as program director as well. And as I came back from college, my freshman year, he threw me in the evenings. And that you're probably right. I probably started at 10 to midnight when you were there.
You were probably the guy that I wondered, am I going to get relieved tonight?
Now, I never missed a shift, I want you to know. I thought about it a number of times, but I never did.
There was a lot of shifting, I think.
Yes, there was.
That occurred because I remember the midnight work.
Yeah.
Midnight till 7 in the morning or whatever. But at different times, you'd be on a different shift.
You know, there was a time that Doc will remember. He used to sign on. But there were, I think it was my junior year in high school, that I would come in at 5 o'clock in the morning and sign on, and Doc would come in at 6.
Right.
And then I would come back, and we did a live show over on the FM from noon until 2, and my afternoon shift on AM was at 2 o'clock, and I was like, everything better go smooth because I've got a newscast that I have to be across the hall. And yeah, you're right. You know, next week they may tell you, by the way, we're shifting things up.
Right.
I remember when I first started in 1968, I came in and was working, if I remember right, it was Friday night, 7 until midnight. Then I would come back and work 10 to 2 on Saturday mornings. Then I would come back and work 6 to midnight on Saturday night. And then come, and then they would say, okay, well, we're going to give you a break. And I did the Kmart show at the time. So then I would come back on Sunday afternoons and work from 12:30 until 4, and then sign the station off at 6 till 11. We signed off at 11 on Sunday nights. And then Bill Sims didn't want to come in early on Monday morning, so he didn't want to come in until 7. And so then they would have the sign-off person come back and work from 5 to 7 in the morning on Monday morning. And it was like 26 hours on the air, if I remember right, over the weekend. So it was quite interesting times. Does anybody remember the spirit?
Katie, the spirit of mid-Wyoming.
We've got the spirit.
Pass it on.
K-A-T-I. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
It was 1975. That had been the new jingle package.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was a big deal when you got a new jingle package.
Oh, for sure.
Deal.
Yeah, it gave us a kick in the butt. It was good.
How about good this stuff. Jingle package?
Reaching out, touching you. K-A-T-I.
Talk about that one.
I remember that one.
After those played it in the hallways, we had our own versions of those jingles.
You know? not repeatable in pleasant company.
Exactly. But I think you can probably tell with some of them were.
I'm going to play a commercial here that, let me figure out which one I want to do. We have a young lady standing behind me who was a commercial star joined by Doc Mueller.
One ringy dingy, two ringy dingy. A gracious good afternoon. Is this the party to whom I am speaking? Nolan Ernestine. How's my favorite man in white? That's a little play on words, you know. Vacuum doctors, man in white. Oh my. But seriously, Nolan, I just wanted you to know how much I'm enjoying my new Philco stereo. The problem is this. I'm having this little dinner party tomorrow night, and I know you've got a large selection of 8-track tapes, and I was wondering if you had some with especially romantic music, kind of S-E-X-Y. No, I don't mean pornographic smut, just something a little erotic. You know what I mean, Nolan. You think you can help me out? Good. Just stick it in your pocket and bring it when you come to dinner. See you about 8, Nolan.
The greatest collection of 8-track tapes in town is at Vacuum Doctors, 260 West 1st.
Connie,
and they'll sound better on a Philco stereo.
You were.
Yeah, that was Connie for Ego, wasn't it?
That was great, Connie.
Well, thanks. I kind of forgot about all those years.
I remember that.
I remember when we were there, and Jock will say this, every time we got around to Valentine's Day, you had to do all these darn Valentine's things. And we would bring Judy Lewis in, who worked there at the time. What a wonderful lady. And she would help us with these ads because she had this nice little soft, lovely feminine voice, but she could not say Valentine. She always said Valentime with an M. And you remember that, Blaney?
We
would have to work with her, and she couldn't hear it. She could not hear it, God bless her. So, Judy, if you're listening, we love you to death, but you could not say Valentine.
And she'd always get the jingles, too, trying so hard, she just it would turn into giggles for her.
It would, yeah.
Oh, God, those are the days, man. Connie, I just wanted to say, you know, she was responsible for writing all that copy for a while. Of course, I cursed her because I had the 2-4 shift and I had to produce all that stuff.
And
So Connie, you cleaned the building, sold the advertising, wrote the copy.
Copy.
Anything else?
I almost turned the station on one morning because nobody showed up when I was cleaning. But I better not mess with it. Meaning it would get awfully mad at me.
Okay, folks, let's take a little break here and come back and reconnoiter and wrap this thing up. Once again, thank you all for being a part of this very, very special KD Classic weekend. We'll take a break and be right back. Back with our special edition of Free for All. And on the line with us, Phil Kuhn, Jock Blaney, Doc Mueller. Pete Williams was here earlier, but had to go make some money for NBC, so he has left us. But Neil Shambaugh is here from West Virginia in the studio. Connie Moore, Ashbaugh, Mark Harkins, and Gene Wallace. Folks, let's do some final thoughts. Let's just kind of do a round robin about some of your thoughts about working at KATI and Pat Meenan and being in Casper. Phil, let's start with you. Phil Rogers, on the air in the early 70s and also an engineer. What's some of the things that you took away from Katie, and we're not talking about that cart machine?
Oh, yeah, you found out about that. it was great. It really was. I think back at those times quite a bit in my old age. Think of the fun we did have then. Pat Meenan, I just heard the other day that he passed on. I was very sorry to hear about that. He was just one great guy, and he did a lot of favors for me, and I sure appreciated it. It's something he went out of his way to do on his own and to really help me out, and he was always there for you.
I just have one question. You're probably one of the few people that we could ask this of. You had no real radio experience before you started. What were your thoughts once you got into the middle of this crew of folks at Katy? I mean, you probably thought everybody was nuts.
It was wild. It was a completely different atmosphere than I was used to because it was all engineering type thing before that. And the only thing I had going for me was that I had been a ham radio operator since I was 13 years old, so the mic didn't scare me to death.
I remember Clyde, and I remember your program with fond memories, so we certainly thank you for joining our group today. Doc Mueller, what was probably your most favorite experience at Katy, if you can single out one?
I really loved doing Free for All. I mean, I just got to interview so many interesting people, and I got to be acquaintances with so many folks in the community, and legislators and other folks that came by. I remember being stunned. We invited then-Governor Hirschler to come up, and I'm from Illinois, and I'm used to governors running around with, five cars around them and armed guards. And this was a Saturday invitation, so we had actually purchased donuts that day, which was a big deal, and made fresh coffee. And the governor comes in, and he's by himself. He drove himself up.
He wasn't with Dick Cedar then, huh?
No, but as soon as the thing was over, we said, "Can we buy you lunch?" He says, "No." He says, "I'm going to go down to the Petroleum Club, and I'm going to have a couple drinks with my friends." And off he went. But to me, that's what was so refreshing about the state of Wyoming and why I came to love it so much. And then the other, and I'm rambling on here, I just loved working with the people that were there and the people who are on this phone. Tremendous talents from whom I learned a great deal, and who, whether we talk once the rest of our lives or every couple of months, I consider all of you friends.
Doc, I do have a question, since I think you're the only one here that hosted Free for All during your period of time.
Yeah.
How in the heck did you do that program pre-internet in Casper, Wyoming, in its desolation and isolation? Where did you find the guests, and just how did you do that program every day for an hour?
You work the phones. You can't be afraid to ask people if they will come on the air with you. We did a lot of long-distance phone interviews at various times. And then somebody I mentioned earlier on, my good friend Steve LaBelle, who basically produced the show for me for a couple of years, he wasn't afraid to ask anybody to come on. So that was the main thing, have an overarching curiosity and not be afraid to call people and ask.
Talk about Steve LaBelle, because I met him a couple of times, but I didn't really know him. He was from back east someplace and had all I remember from him was accent.
He was a good friend of Coleman's, an excellent friend. Blaney has more stories about Steve than do I.
But Shlomo.
Yeah, Shlomo. And Steve is currently in Oregon, and he's working in public broadcasting out there. And I get to talk to him every few months, doing quite well, married now. And he was a great guy to work with, and a wonderful newsman with an accent that you could cut with a knife.
And he came to Casper with the Casper Star Tribune. Right.
And he was from where, though? That accent?
I want to say New York.
New York.
He was from New York.
Yeah, New York City.
That was what I remember. Boy, and there were times when it was hard to understand what he was trying to say.
Great guy. Great guy.
Yeah, great guy.
Neil Shambaugh, you're sitting back in West Virginia. Give me some of your thoughts of your year at Katy and your sentence there at Katy.
Well, it was a thrill being about a 22-year-old, and I was playing the hits for the kids at Casper. And that was pretty heady for a young kid, and I just loved the whole I hated all those request lines going all the time because I had to play the same damn songs all the time, but I loved that privilege of doing that, and also to be a part of personality radio. We have that in common, so we're all kind of an extended family, but I would never trade that experience for anything.
Gene Wallace?
I absolutely share the feelings that have been expressed already. Just wonderful people, wonderful friends. I think somewhat unfortunate that, you know, we don't have an opportunity to get together occasionally. Dave, I very much appreciate what you're doing here, engineering a
family reunion.
You know, for me, I had no appreciable experience when I started working at Katy. I think I had to overcome mic fright, all of the things. Maybe that's why I was on the all-night show for so long. But, you know, radio is all about communication. What Katy, I think, did for me in the years that have come and gone is make me more aware of communication and trying to communicate properly, effectively, in different circumstances. It certainly was a very important time in my life, probably much more important than I thought at the time.
Connie Moore, Ashbaugh.
Yes.
Yeah, talk about your thoughts of Katy and wrap it up a little bit.
As everybody has commented, it was a fun place to work and wonderful people and to get out in the community and learn and help your community grow and such. I'm still doing the same thing. I don't clean anymore. I have a cleaning lady. But
she does have the million.
No. But it's still fun, but it's nothing like it used to be. It's just, those are good memories.
Thanks, Connie.
And thanks to you.
Mark Harkins?
Boy, you know, as I said, I was just a young kid. I can remember spending time with Gene before Doc and Jock came to town. I remember Jock taking me under his wing, mentoring me somewhat as a young kid. Now, he probably just thought, I got to put up with this kid. But, you know, I appreciated it so much, the unbelievable talent there, the intellect of Doc Mueller. And Doc and I were friends, good friends at the time. And you think back at those times, and I got to tell you, there is nothing out there. My father told me when I started, you know, once you get media in your blood, you're never going to get out of it. Well, I haven't worked in it for years, but you don't ever get out of it.
Mark, you just mentioned your father, and boy, I don't want to forget him. He was a big part of Katy in the late 60s and early 70s. He hosted Free for All. He did sports. Talk a bit about your dad's role, too. I don't want to forget him.
Boy, you know, for those people that are that age, Chuck Harkins, I mean, he's still one of the most intellectual people I've ever known in my entire life. Passed away a number of years ago. But he did do sports. He won all of the sports awards for the state of Wyoming and the northwestern part of the United States.
And what a personality and humor. Oh, my.
That would depend whether you were his son or not.
Well,
I can tell you, I can remember doing news one day and saying, you know, so-and-so was charged with harassment. And the phone rang, and I knew if I was doing news and the phone rang, I knew it was going to be my dad. He if you can't pronounce the word right, don't read the news. Now, I got to tell you, he used to tell me, you know, go in the bathroom or someplace and take the newspaper and read it. And, you know, that's just the way my father was. But, you know, I have great memories of that. And, of course, I got to know people because of that in radio. That's really what led me into the broadcasting business. As I said, I came to see him and Bob Coleman, I think, thought, well, man, his dad can do that. Let's hire him. We need somebody. Midnight to 6 in the morning.
All right, Mark. Finally, I think I've gotten down to everybody except the man who's standing in the rain in a Seattle parking lot, Jock Blaney. Some of your thoughts.
Probably in jail by now.
To break through now. No, I have to reiterate, too. I think But, you know, the times were fun. You know, we all had great times and everything. But the things you really take away are the people that made those memories. When Doc got there, you know, I got to be really close with Doc. We had great times. And that laugh you could hear from outside the building, it was awesome, you know, just to hang out with Doc. And Mark, I'll tell you, man, it was a pleasure being around you. You soaked it up like a sponge, man. You really did. I don't think it was any pressure from your dad either. I think it was, you know, the kind of pressure you put on yourself to just do a really good job, and you really did. I remember Neil Shanval when he first got there. It was great, man. He was just like eyes wide open, wanted to. And I don't know. This is just kind of like a quick, funny little story. Well, it wasn't really funny at the time.
Oh, great! I can't remember.
He'd just gotten married, and his wife had made this chili. I don't know whether you remember this or not. You remember that?
Yeah, I went to the hospital.
Yeah. I mean, it went in, but there's no way it would come out until he went to the hospital. Yeah. He had to have his stomach pumped or something. I remember I thought it was going to be very serious.
Well, if you thought it was bad, the next week it was mushroom soup, and I had to do the same thing.
we should have done it. I'd have made a bunch of it. We could have paid for Katie Lehman.
Oh, gracious.
And then, you know, Gene Wallace, man, it's one of the, you know, I don't know, it was Mike Fright where that story came from, but it never seemed like he ever had any. The guy was just totally smooth on the air. It was just great listening to him because he was so damn smooth. It was just, you know, it was almost like a ballet dance watching him work the knobs and, you know, the pots in there. And I wanted to say knob instead of pot because, you know, the
people wanted to get that.
Right. Yeah.
Volume controls.
I'll tell you that board was just
easiest
such a big part of the whole experience.
Now, all right, guys, we're going to have to wrap up this party.
Basically, all I want to say is just basically the people and hearing, you know, Phil's stories and stuff, you know, from the early 70s and stuff. It's just been great being on the same air with you guys again, and I really enjoyed it, and I hope we can all keep in touch a little bit more than we have.
Jock Blaney, enjoy your golf game in the rain in Seattle today. Thank you to Phil Kuhn, Jock Blaney, Doc Mueller, Pete Williams earlier, Neil Shambaugh, Mark Harkins, Gene Wallace, Connie Moore. What a great crowd to draw to. Thank you very much. Let's see if you remember this one last jingle here.
Reach it out, K-A-T-I, or touching you, K-A-T-I.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Everybody have a great day.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, everybody.
See you, Johnny.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
See you, Doc.
Bye.
Take care, fellas.
We'll see you guys.
This has been Free for All, your morning telephone discussion program. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KATI, its ownership, management, employees, or sponsors.